My name is Lee Edwards, and I'm a fellow at the Heritage Foundation. I'm also honored to be chairman of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Now, one of the things that we need to keep in mind as we get to this last panel and talk about Democrats and Republicans today, chances of realignment looking forward, is that we've been talking about parties, and yes, and this is perhaps particularly for our younger attendees, that the Republican Party, which is our primary political vehicle these days, is one thing, and the conservative movement is something else. And sometimes we conflate the two, and we think that whatever happens to the Republicans is going to happen necessarily to us as conservatives and as members of a movement. That's not the case. Just something to keep in mind. So what I'm going to do is talk for just a few minutes, maybe five or so, give a little background, a little historical background about the idea of alignment, and then I'll turn it over to our wonderful, wonderful panelists. So what do the election years, 1800, 1828, 1860, 1896, 1932, and 1980 have in political common? They're usually described as critical or realigning elections by historians who argue they produced a significant realignment in our political system. We've heard a good deal about that already today. The political scientist James Wilson, the late James Wilson, wrote, quote, that an electoral realignment occurs when a new issue of utmost importance cuts across existing party divisions and replaces old issues that had formerly been the basis of party identification. So, what about 2016? Is it a realigning election? Well, we know from history that realignment occurs when the following happens. There's a major crisis, like a war or a depression. Significant demographic shifts take place. A major political party becomes seriously weakened. New political leadership with new ideas comes to the fore. A less critical precondition is a good showing by third parties, attesting to the weakness of the existing parties. Well, as we know, as we heard today, following the 1800 election, the defeated Federalists disappeared to be succeeded by the Whigs. Andrew Jackson's decisive 1828 presidential victory gave rise to a two-party system and two decades of Democratic dominance. By 1860, the Whig Party had collapsed, and the succeeding Republicans under Abraham Lincoln won the presidency. For nearly 40 years following the Civil War, Republicans dominated national as well as state elections. In 1896, Republican William McKinley handily defeated Democrat William Jennings Bryan and his populist crusade. Then we jump to 1932, and the Democrats under the progressive Franklin D. Roosevelt swept the presidency, both houses of Congress, and the governorships. And from 1932 through 1964, the Democrats won 7 of 9 presidential elections. Nearly 50 years after FDR won the first of 4 presidential elections, the Republicans under the conservative Ronald Reagan successfully challenged the Democrats, preparing the way for 3 consecutive presidential victories in 1980, 84, and 88. And the historical congressional gains of 1994. So, again, the question, what about 2016? Well, let's review our criteria. 1, are we in the midst of a crisis, like a war or a depression? Does Iraq or Afghanistan qualify as a major war? Have we truly recovered from the Great Recession of 2008? Well, I think it's fair to say that no major crisis confronts the nation, at least at this point, although Islamic terrorism has the potential to become one. Two, is either or both of our major political parties in a seriously weakened state? Do they appear ready for retirement or internment? In the early stages of Trumpism, the Republican Party was said to be in danger of disappearing if he were elected. But as the presidential race has tightened, there is less apocalyptic talk about the certain demise of the Republican Party. Three, have important demographic shifts occurred? Is America on track, as some have argued, to become the most ethnically and racially diverse nation in the world? Unquestionably, there have been serious demographic and historic demographic changes over the last several decades, with a massive influx of Latinos and Asians. This is an overlooked part by some observers, and a declining majority of white Americans. Four, has new leadership appeared in either major party? In fact, new leaders and new ideas have emerged in both parties, or one might argue old new ideas or new old ideas, but albeit in the person of septuagenarians, Donald Trump, the populist, and Bernard Sanders, the socialist. Fifth, as a third party muscled its way into the presidential race, after initially reaching 10% or a little bit more in some polls, the Libertarian Party's candidates have settled at around 8%, far below Ross Perot's impressive 19% showing in the year 1992. So, as of today, then, only two of the five necessary conditions for realignment are present, not including the most important, a strategic or economic crisis. That fact, coupled with the extreme closeness of the Clinton-Trump contest, suggests that 2016 is not yet a critical or realigning election. However, and there's always a however, if through a series of presently unforeseen political events, either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, if they should win, either one of them, in a landslide, electoral or popular, America is likely to experience a political earthquake on a scale of 7.0. And now to our panelists. Gleaves Whitney, director of the Hohenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. I think dynamic is an appropriate word for Gleaves, who has hosted hundreds of public programs, directs the center's website, which has been visited by more than 30 million times, writes a web column on the presidency, and in his spare time, created a leadership academy for students and young professionals committed to public service. I think Gleaves should be nominated for the society's leading intellectual entrepreneur. Daniel McCarthy is editor of the American Conservative, responsible for its provocative examination of current and not so current affairs. It's been published in Modern Age, Reason, and other journals that challenge the liberal zeitgeist. Edward Erler is distinguished visiting professor at Hillsdale College. Previously, he's been at California State University San Bernardino, a senior fellow at the Claremont Institute, has published widely on civil rights, citizenship, and immigration, and is the co-author of The Founders on Citizenship and Immigration. I'm going to ask Gleaves, if he will, to step to the mic and kick us off for our concluding panel.